and purport by His Divine Grace, the Boy Charanar of Inna Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just as Baladev knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra, the king of Kalingi, during the gambling match at the marriage ceremony of Aniruddha, Virabhadra knocked out the teeth of both Daksha, who had shown them while cursing Lord Shiva, and Pusha, by his smiling sympathetically, had also shown his teeth. Please repeat. Just as Baladeva knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra, the king of Kalingi, during the gambling match, at the marriage ceremony of Aniruddha, Virabhadra knocked out the teeth of both Daksha, who had shown them while cursing Lord Shiva, and Pusha, who by smiling sympathetically had also shown his teeth. I thought. Here a reference is made to the marriage of Aniruddha, the grandson of Lord Krishna. He kidnapped the daughter of Dantavakra, and thereafter he was arrested. Just as he was to be punished for the kidnapping, the soldiers of Dwaraka arrived, headed by Balaram, and a fight ensued amongst the Kshatriyas. This sort of fight was very common, especially during the marriage ceremonies, when everyone was in a challenging spirit. In that challenging spirit, a fight is sure to occur. And in such fights, there was commonly killing and misfortune. After finishing such fighting, the parties would come back to compromise, and everything would be settled. Thus, the Daksha Jagna was similar to such events. Now all of them, Daksha and the demigods, Bhaga and Pusha and Bhrigumuni, were punished by the soldiers of Shiva. But later everything would come to a peaceful end. So the spirit of fighting between one another was not exactly inimical, because everyone was so powerful, and wanted to show his strength by Vedic mantras or mystic power, all these fighting skills were very elaborately exhibited by the different parties of Daksha's Jagna. Om Agyanti Midan Dasha Chananjanan Shalakayo Takshuram Nuditan Dina Tasmaya Shri Guruvi Namaha. Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Bhashari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hari Hari. Hari Rama, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari. So here, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out the nature of Kshatriyas. They like to fight. They have a chivalrous relationship, chivalrous rasa. So this is found in the spiritual world, and therefore the reflection, it comes in this material world. Krishna likes to fight, but there's no fighting in the Vaikuntha. So in Golok there is fighting. With Krishna and his friends, they're always fighting every day. They're playing and fighting, and who will be the first to do this, who will carry each other. So in Golok there's nothing absent, nothing. But in Vaikuntha, one time Jai Vijay, they saw that the Lord of Vaikuntha, he was he's a king, so he's a Kshatriya, so that spirit was there, but he couldn't exhibit his propensity to fight in Vaikuntha. So therefore a plan was devised to satisfy the Lord by coming to this material world. And the pastime of the four Kumaras when they went to see the Lord, and they were cursed. Jai Vijay, the gatekeepers, tried to stop the four Kumaras. Who are the first sons of Lord Brahma. So the four Kumaras became angry. This is all the pastime of the Lord to evolve his pastime. And they cursed the gatekeepers, Jai Vijay, you will come fall down in the material world, but you can have a choice. You can come have seven births as demons, or you can have seven births as devotees, or three births as demons. They thought, better get back as quickly as possible. So they said, we'll take three births. Then it won't be so long in the material world. So then they came, Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. They took three different births. Therefore they came in and had big battles, wonderful battles with the demons. Most of the demons were devotees, but not all. Prabhupada said there were some real demons. A lot of them were taking birth, like Jaya and Vijay. They weren't really inimical to the Lord. They wanted to satisfy the Lord's desire. So anyway, there is a chivalrous nature. There is a planet called Pathasharati, the Vaikuntha planet, where those who have the Kshatriya spirit, they can go to that planet. I don't know what they do there. Maybe they ride around on chariots and boast and things like that, because Kshatriyas like to show off their powers, and maybe they have competition. I don't know. But anyway, Prabhupada said there's a planet. Those who have a chivalrous relationship with Krishna, they can go to that planet. Just like Bhishma Deva. Bhishma Deva had a relationship with Krishna as a Kshatriya. And here in this relationship, then Bhishma is actually firing arrows into Krishna's body. So what kind of a relationship is like that? But it said that Krishna, he was accepting that, just like the lover bites another lover. Just like that biting, that's pleasurable. So Krishna was feeling these arrows being pierced by his devotee is very, very pleasurable. And he would also pierce back his enemies and Bhishma. So that battle was going on for Bhishma Dev. He said, I'm going to kill Arjuna tomorrow and the Pandavas. If Krishna doesn't take up weapons, then I will kill the Pandavas. So anyway, during the battle that day, it was so ferocious, Bhishma was so ferocious. And Arjuna was becoming overpowered. Arjuna couldn't handle it. Bhishma was the greatest Kshatriya at that time, Grandfather Bhishma. He's had thousands of battles. He has experience with thousands of battles. They're always like battles. So he was completely overpowering Arjuna. Arjuna just couldn't move. You know, he went to get an arrow and arrow in his hand, and get another one, another arrow, and when he get this, his arrow would be cut, his bow would break. Bhishma there was so ferocious in his attack on Arjuna. Arjuna just couldn't move. He was completely. But Krishna saw that Arjuna is going to be killed. He's my best friend, and he's going to be killed. He jumped off the chariot, picked up that broken wheel, rushed towards Bhishma. I'll kill you, Bhishma. He's so angry. Bhishma said, "Oh, here is my most lovable object rushing. You know, is that personified for anyone else, right? You see someone really angry rushing towards you with a weapon to kill you. You'd be scared." But Bhishma Devi said, "Oh, here comes the love of my life. Here comes. I love to see this in this angry mood as a Kshatriya." So Bhishma Devi, he surrendered to him. So Krishna couldn't kill him. Otherwise, he's prepared to kill him. Despite the promise he had taken, Krishna promised at the beginning of the battle, "I won't take up any weapons. I'll join the side of the Pandavas, but I won't take up weapons." So Krishna broke that promise. To keep Bhishma's promise. Bhishma promised, "I'll kill these. Unless Krishna takes up weapon, if he takes up a weapon, otherwise if he doesn't take up a weapon, I will kill these Arjuna and the Pandavas." So Krishna took up that weapon. I think it was a broken chariot wheel or something. He didn't notice. He just saw Bhishma. And his chada was flying, running towards Bhishma. His chada was flying off. He didn't even notice it. He just saw Bhishma. "I'm going to kill my friend Arjuna. I've got to protect him." So here is Krishna, big speaker of Bhagavad Gita, telling how we should be equipoised, everything should be peaceful, we should be tolerant, and all these big instructions that Krishna is telling Arjuna. When it came to showing, he lost it, you know. Didn't even see his charter flying off. So that kind of relationship you can have with Krishna. See, Prabhupada named in Delhi temple Radha Pata Sarati. Nobody can understand it. Why Pata Sarati? Anyway. Delhi was the king. The kings in Hastinapura, that the kings were living there. So he named Radha Pata Sarati the deity there. So according to one's relationship with Krishna, then he can go to that particular place where Krishna is acting and performing these different pastimes. They're eternally going on, so you can have an eternal relationship with Krishna. In all these different moods, even if you want the chivalrous mood, like Bhishma Dev, there's the eternal planet. And you mentioned in the Navadip Dhammahatmya, there's a place called Bhishmatila. Bhishma is staying there. Bhishma Dev, he went to see his uncle, Janamuni, who was living in Navadvip. Janudvip, that's one of the nine islands in the Janudvipa. So Janamuni was living there, performing his austerities. And Bhishma Dev, he went to see Janamuni when he was a young man, because Bhishma Dev is the son of Ganga Devi. And because Janamuni, he swallowed all the Ganga when she was coming down to the earth planet. Bhagirathi Maharaj was tracing out the path, blowing his conch shell with the chariot, and the Ganga was coming behind him, going down to deliver all of his forefathers in the Ganga Sagara. And he was racing on his chariot, And Ganga was coming behind, and she was just falling at great speed from the heavenly planets, coming down, and there was all fish, Timingila fish, whales, sharks, all kinds of aquatics were there. And Ganga Devi was so frivolously splashing everywhere. So Jani Muni, he was sitting doing his meditation. He had his ashram cup there. He just did his ashram. And Ganga Devi was so frivolously coming. She swept away his ashram cup. So he said, "What's that disturbance?" So he opened his eyes and so on. He swallowed Ganga Devi with one gulp. And so Bhagirathi Maharaj is tracing the, making the path for Ganga, and there's no sound coming anymore. So he went back to trace back to the Ganga, trace back, and then he saw Janamuni sitting there. So, and Janamuni explained what had happened. So, Bhagirathi Maharaj said, "I have to take the Ganga down to the Bay of Peshwam to deliver my forefathers. She cannot stop now here." So then Janamuni said, "Okay." So he released her from his thigh. The thigh is called Janu. So because she released Ganga Devi from his thigh, he released Ganga Devi from his thigh. He's considered the father of Ganga Devi because she was born from him. And so Bhishmadev was also born from Ganga Devi. So his uncle, is it uncle? Uncle Janu, Janu Muni. So Bhishmadevi, he went there to Janu to see his uncle Janu Muni. He just went there to visit a relative. He didn't go on any spiritual quest, but he went to Navadvip. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in the Navadvip Pavitranga, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the program of the Dharma, and it's being revealed to him all these different places and the glories of Navadvip Dharma. And at Bhishmatila, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he sees Bhishmadev. Bhishmadev reveals himself. Blackish color, like Krishna, he's got Shroop City, blackish body. 12 tilaks, chandan, kunti mala, japa mala, Bhakta Bhishma. Bhakta Bhishma Deva there in Navadvip. And he reveals himself to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And he gives him many instructions. He explains to him how this is Navadvip Dham. This is my very special of abode. Sorry, a very special abode of Navadvip is the Dham of Lord Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And he said, well, when I was not dying, he had a choice to live or die. He had a benediction. But when he was on the bed of arrows, and this picture you usually see of Bhishmadeva and all the arrows going right through him. And his Prabhupada said it wasn't exactly like that. Because Vaishnavas, they wouldn't like to see that. He's a Mahajana, they wouldn't like to see that. So what it is, they make a Kshatriya bed, and all the Kshatriyas, they throw their arrows in the ground, same height. So he gets a bed, feathered bed. You know, the arrows have feathers on them. The original feathered bed, we get nice and soft, right? Everything is in the spiritual world. So feather bed, arrows, and he lays it, they lay him on top of it, so it's not, although his arrows sticking in. So he was waiting for Krishna to come. Some places it says he was waiting for the sun to make this southern journey in the light, during the light period, which is good for the yogis to leave their body. But actually he was waiting for Krishna to come. And Krishna came at that time. And Krishna gave him many instructions, which later on he gave to Yudhishthira. When Yudhishthira became the emperor. So so Bhishmadev, he tells Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that Krishna came, when I was lying on there on that bed of arrows, he whispered something very confidential to me. And he said, when you were a young man, you visited your uncle. Simply because you visited that place is called Nabadweep, my uncle's living. Very, very special abode of mine in Kali Yuga. I will perform my pastimes there as Lord Garanga. Very special abode. Simply because you visited that place. You just came out to see your uncle. When you leave your body, you'll get a body in Patasrati Loka, because you have that rasa, that relationship of Shivari. So you can go to that planet. And simultaneously, you'll get another body, you can serve me as Lord Gauranga in Nabadweep. So he has two bodies, maybe even more. They can have as many of them. But anyway, Krishna gave him two bodies. One is in Patasarathi as his Kshatriya, and the other one, he's got the body in Nabadweep as Bhakta Bhishma Devahi. So, devotees of Krishna, they go back to Krishna Loka. Devotees of Gauranga, they go back to Nabadweep. The devotees of Krishna through Gauranga, they simultaneously get a body to serve Gauranga and a body to serve Radha Krishna or other. So anyway, the Kshatriya spirit is here because it's there in the spiritual world. Everything has its origin in the spiritual world. Otherwise, it wouldn't be here. There's nothing exclusive to the material world that is not in the spiritual world. So here he's talking about this fighting was not uncommon, and killing also. Especially during marriage ceremonies, when there was the kidnapping, the Rakshasa style of marriage, you kidnap Gandhavas. So that would often go on, and Aniruddha, he kidnapped the daughter of Dantavakra. And so that then it was like a test. We'll have a test, who's the strongest party. They'll have a fight and see who comes out victorious. And if the so-called bridegroom happens to get killed, then the one who kidnapped him, because he showed more prowess, and he would take the queen as his wife. And then after they would come to some agreement, and then it'll be peaceful again. And, you know, we went to the wedding, it was a good fight, we got something to talk about, and we got a new son-in-law, and we didn't expect this one, but somehow or another, because he kidnapped her. And everything would go. So, as Prabhupada mentioned, it wasn't exactly they were actually inimical, but they just wanted to have something to go to a wedding party, you know. They wanted a bit of enlightenment there, a bit of... Prabhupada's quoting also Baladev, Balaram, he went to. to the kidnapping. Who was that? Shamba, was it? Was it Shamba? When Balaram dragged the Jamuna. Was it Shamba? Shamba. Anyway, I think Shamba kidnapped. Yeah, he kidnapped Subhadra also. Yeah, I'm talking about another one. Is it Lakshmana? Lakshmana? Shamba kidnapped Lakshmana. Anyway, Baladev said, Krishna went out there. Baladev said, Krishna went out there to have a fight to get back Shamba. They kidnapped Shamba. He kidnapped the girl, but they captured him unfairly. And so Krishna went out there to get him back. He was going for a fight. And Balaram said, no, it's a wedding party. There's their relatives. I'll go ahead, I'll pacify them. So Balaram went ahead and tried to pacify them. telling how great Krishna was. And even the demigods come and bow down before him. And the Kauravas, they insulted Lord Balaram superficially. They gave him insult. You're not kings, you Pandavas. We've given you a little bit of land, but actually you're not kings. We're the kings, but because you're our family members, we give you a little bit of... Well, and we've allowed you to use the chamara, the whisk. It's a royal insignia. We're offering the white chamara, the whisk. We're allowing you to use that, although you don't deserve it, but we're allowing you. And you can wear the crowns and everything like that. They were insulting Balaram. He said he got really, really angry. His eyes were red. Became so agitated. Everybody was... So anyway, he becomes so angry that he said, I'll do something. You know, you're insulting Krishna, saying he's not powerful enough. The demigods come down and bow the head at his lotus feet. Lakshmi Devi is always with him, and you're saying he's not powerful. Then Balaram, with his plow, he dragged the Jamuna. The city of Hastinapura. The whole city became, he started pulling the whole city. It started trembling, it's like an earthquake was going on and buildings were falling. And he was going to put the whole city in the Jamuna. And then suddenly they came to their senses. The Kauravas, oh, we're in real danger now and the whole city is going to be annihilated. So they went to Balaram and offered him praise. And we're sorry, please don't be angry, please don't destroy the city. So then they pacified Balaram. And he said, we planned like this. We wanted to see a bit of Kshatriya spirit. We want to see a little show at the wedding. There should be some show goes on that we like. So actually we created this. It was just a superficial insult. So we wanted to see a display of your power. Now we can understand how powerful you are. You can. So they liked it. The Kshatriyas liked that. The Kshatriya spirit. So. Yeah, he's also quoting Dantavakra. They challenged Balaram to the dice match, gambling match, or chess. Anyway, gambling match. And anyway, they cheated, and Balaram got angry. What do you know about gambling? What do you know about Kshatriya's activities? You're just a cowboy. You and Krishna, you herd cows, and they were giving really pinching talk and laughing at him and showing their teeth and insulting him. Even there was an oracle from the sky. By all fair means, Balaram is the rightful winner of this game. No, that's... They started to... So Balaram, he couldn't tolerate it anymore. He became really angry. And then he started to beat them all up. He got his plow. He started to knock the teeth out of Dantavakra, the king of Kalingi. Because Dantavakra was showing his teeth, and when he was laughing at Krishna Balaram being insulted, he was showing his teeth. So he got he smashed all of his teeth out with his plow. and also Daksha's teeth he knocked out, because he was showing them when he was cursing Lord Shiva. And also Pusha, he was smiling sympathetically, seeing all the insult. He had his teeth knocked out as well. Yes, so that the common fighting was going on when at the weddings. So here, Daksha is, I mean, it's heavy, heavy. All of the soldiers of Lord Shiva came, big battle took place. And because everyone was so powerful, and wanted to show his strength. Everyone was so powerful and wanted to show their strength by Vedic mantras or mystic power. All the fighting skills were elaborately exhibited by the different parties of the Daksha Yagya. So they took it as a good time to exhibit their prowesses and fighting skills, either by mystic power or mantra or just ordinary weapons. So yeah, Balaram was used to this. He was often killing different enemies. Even when he gave up, during the Battle of Kurukshetra, he said, "I'm not going to take part, I'll go on pilgrimage." So he went on pilgrimage on the plea of not taking part in the fratricidal war. So he also came to Navadvip. There he had a big battle with a demon named Mayasura. Mayamorimot is the place near Jagannath Mandir in Mayapur, is on the bank of the Jalangi. Mayamorimot. Big battle took there, some demon named Maya. And when Balaram came to the area, then all the Brahmanas requested him, "There's one big demon here, you're a Kshatriya, can you kill him?" Even though the Brahmanas could use mantras and kill him, but still they employed the Kshatriyas, "You can kill him." So there's a big battle assured there. Ensured the Maya demon. And so they were showing all their Kshatriya's skills in fighting. And so a couple of demons he killed there. Another one, Shankashanketra, he killed a demon there. So this killing of Dantavakra, this actually took place in Delhi. Prabhupada said even that today there is that road, the name is there, something like that. It's a derivation of what's his name? Dantavakra. There's a road there, Prabhupada said, that Lee goes from Delhi. It still bears the name Dantavakra. So there he was killed there, near to Delhi, Hastinapur. So he was the last of the demons. The last two demons were killed. Krishna went to kill them. Dantavakra and then his brother, Vidurata. First he killed Dantavakra. The chakra. After a big battle. And then his brother Vidurata was so angry, he rushed on the battlefield. Krishna also killed him. So after that, then Krishna went to Vrindavan. Because he had promised he would go. So he never broke his promise. But he went to go. He said this was a good time because Dantavakra, he's killed Dantavakra. He was out of Mathura. Anyway, he was near to Vrindavan. He was near to Vrindavan. So he thought, "I'll take this opportunity and go because everybody thinks I'm on the battlefield. So they won't know, nobody will know where I am." So I think very quickly after killing Dantavakra, Krishna went to Vrindavan. And there, he met all the inhabitants of Vrindavan again. And then it was just exactly as it was before he left Vrindavan. It was exactly like that again. Because previous to that, everything was kind of devastated. It was kind of, when Uddhava went there, saw the situation that it was with Krishna, they were just waiting for Krishna to come back. So the whole place was in a complete like devastation. Uddhava sent Krishna to pacify the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So when he went there, when he arrived there, he saw Vrindavan as it was when Krishna was there. The Prakat Leela and Apakrat Leela, when Krishna left, it became unmanifested. But when Uddhava arrived there, Krishna displayed the Apakrat Leela, the unmanifested Leela. Became so, it was exactly as it was when Krishna was there. And all the thousands of cows here and there, and mooing and milking. He got there in the milking time. They were milking cows and the lamps and everything, and for decoration and worship of the different gods and things like that, and kalashis and lotus, golden lotuses and leaves and all auspicious things. And and everyone was ecstatic, chanting the glories of Krishna and all the life of Krishna as in the cowherd community. And then Yogamaya pulled the curtain and covered it. And then he actually saw the real state of Vrindavan at that time. So he showed him first the Apakrat Leela so he would realize the difference. He could see the emotions that they were going through in this separation. So first they had a picture of the real Vrindavan, and then they had the picture of half the Krishna had left, and everyone was just devastated. And Krishna said to Uddhava, when you go there, you will... Yeah, everybody, but you just you'll see all the cows and everything. They want no cows and calves, but they're not, calves are not bothering to drink milk. Cows are not bothering to give any milk. They're not even bothering eating anything. Everything just stopped. The trees, they're not interested in giving off their fruits, their flowers. The whole of Vrindavan was just kind of stunned in devastation, in separation from Krishna. And Krishna said, and when you will see my mother, when you see my mother, Jasoda, she's simply looking down that road that Akura, he took Krishna away. Looking. She's just sitting there taking very deep breaths. And she's just, Ha Krishna, Ha Krishna. She's taking very deep breaths, because every time she breathes out, all that comes out is Ha Krishna, Ha Krishna. And it's so painful for the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So therefore she takes very slow breaths to alleviate the pain of the breathing out, chanting Ha Krishna. And when you see Radharani, you think she's dead. She's lying down. The only reason she's alive, you will see a little pulse there in her neck. Otherwise, she... But anyway, if you start chanting my glories, she will come to consciousness again. So this was the devastation at that time. And they were living like that while Krishna was absent. But then Krishna came back after he killed Dantavakra. And everything was for 2 months, they were just as it was before. Krishna was going out with the cows, going out, meeting Radharani at the Radha Kund in noontime, then going home with all the boys and calves again, coming out at night on the Jamuna, doing their rasa dance, everything exactly as it was before. For 2 months, then everything... It all went back. All the different demigods went back to their different positions. Mother Jasoda and Nanda Maharaj, they all went back to Goloka. Their expansions were Drona and Dara, who were demigods, who also appeared in Jasoda. They went back to the heavenly planets. Everyone went back to where they came from. Because in the beginning, when Krishna said he's going to appear here, when Lord Brahma and the demigods went to the ocean of milk, he said, you should all take birth in the Yadu and Vrishni dynasties. All the demigods, all the exalted births. So they all took different births in the Vrishni and Yadu dynasties. And so they all went back either to the demigod planets or wherever they came from. And everything was finished. And when people went to Vrindavan, where is everybody? What happened? What happened? There was nobody was there. Everybody had gone back to Godhead. And then in another form, Krishna, he went back to Dwarka alone. And then in Dwarka, he performed these Mushala Leela there, the disappearance pastimes. He wound everything up in Dwarka with the feathers and everything. Yeah, so here, something for everyone in Srimad Bhagavatam. If you like to exhibit your power, strength, anger, then there's a place for you in Srimad Bhagavatam. You can have an eternal place. So everything is there originally in the spiritual world. All these relationships and everything is different. Rasas are going on, and Krishna is the Rasaraja. That's his business, simply to taste that relationship, whether in Shakiras, Dasyaras, Madhuryaras. That's Krishna's pleasure. He is. That's his only business, his pleasure. So everybody can have a relationship with Krishna that is unique. Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur said that everybody does have a relationship with Krishna that is unique from anyone else. Some slight degrees. Different from anyone else. So actually everyone has an original relationship with Krishna that no one else has. Or a different flavor of a different relationship. So this is Krishna consciousness. We are cultivating Krishna consciousness to understand our eternal relationship with Krishna. So we can go back to Godhead and eternally engage in that relationship with Krishna. This is the Srila Prabhupada, his Bhagavad Gita as it is. In the last chapter, last verse, last paragraph, last sentence, Prabhupada finishes Bhagavad Gita on this point, and often the author will reveal the intentions of his book at the very end. So Prabhupada's very end of his Bhagavad Gita as it is revealing his intention. And he's saying how the living entity, he has minute independence, and by proper use of that independence, again he will come in the atmosphere, the pleasure-giving potency of the Lord. He will regain his normal condition and again enter into the pleasure-giving potency or the Haladini potency. Haladini is the expansion of Srimata Radharani. That is the Krishna's greatest pleasure. So Haladini, the pleasure potency. So this is where Prabhupada wants to take us. He wants to put us back in that atmosphere where we are bringing Radha and Krishna pleasure, where we are serving Radha and Krishna. That's the intention of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. They find their natural constitution in the pleasure-giving potency. Bengali means, sorry, Sanskrit means Haladini potency. So this is where Prabhupada's Gita is taking us. Prabhupada's intention, he's come to put us back in our constitutional natures. In the pleasure-giving potency, serving Krishna, to satisfy the senses of Krishna. in any way you want. If you've got a big variety here, you have a very emotional conjugal relationship, or you can have a chivalrous relationship, completely the opposite, and all those in between. So this is what Krishna's business. He has come and he's performed these pastimes, he's showing all these different pastimes, all these different relationships. Somehow or another you've left this spiritual world. Now somehow or another you come back, whatever you want, you can try for it now, whatever you like, if you were in any way dissatisfied before, but somehow or another we left the spiritual world. Must have been some reason behind it. But Krishna went, now you can find a relationship that you're going to become completely happy. Whatever it is that Krishna says, I will give to you. Whatever relationship you want with me, I will give you. He just wants our happiness. And so this is the kindness of Krishna. Even though we've turned our faces from Krishna, Krishna is so kind. He's begging us still to come back home, back to Godhead. Yeah, and in any relationship, whatever we desire, that we can have. Shatya Shankalpa. The desires we feel by Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Jaya Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki. Sambheda Bhaktabhinda ki jai. Nithai Gopremanandi ki. Hare Krishna, thank you. Any comment or question? Yes, Prabhu.
The significance of showing your teeth, in the cases that we read in the pastimes of the Bhagavatam, we usually were laughing or joking, and or even smiling. And it's hard to appreciate, at least from our cultural perspective, it's hard to appreciate when that's offensive. Whereas, if a dog is snarling and they're showing their teeth, or a monkey's, showing their teeth, then that's, we can relate to that. But to it being offensive if you're laughing at somebody, it's hard to kind of put that together as being offensive. Certainly offensive about what a dog's put his teeth out. So I'm just wondering,
well, they were talking among themselves, the kings and everything. They were criticizing Krishna and Balaram, and they would laugh and show their teeth among themselves and show their thigh, and they broke the thighs of one of the kings. He was slapping his thighs and laughing. So he broke his thighs. Balaram broke his thighs because he was slapping his thighs. Yeah, but it's mostly among themselves. They're all ganging up on Balaram and having a good laugh and showing their teeth. He didn't like it. It was pinching. Too much pinching. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. Grandfather, is it?
No, grandfather.
Is it?
Bhishma
is the son of Ganga Devi.
Yeah. And she's his daughter, Ganga also becomes the daughter of Janavishi.
Yeah.
How is he uncle?
Oh, so it's not uncle. What relationship is it? Brother? No.
Grandfather.
Oh, grandfather. Yeah, he simply came here to visit his grandfather. Nice instructions. He gives Bhaktivinoda Thakur nice instruction. And one of them, he's explaining how Navadvip Dham is the transcendental realm. Here, if you have the vision to see, you'll see palatial buildings everywhere. The holy name is being chanting, all the kirtan is going on, and countless devotees, all different types of service, all mad in ecstatic love for Krishna. But, he said, as long as your intelligence still sticks to material identity, this will not be revealed to you. So I thought that was a very nice instruction. Because our intelligence does stick to material identity quite strongly, at least for me. Yeah, as long as your intelligence still sticks to material identity, it will not be visible. So if you're identifying yourself as a man or a woman or an Indian or an Englishman, the Dham will not be visible. But he says, by association of devotees and cultivating Trinada Pishnuchi, Todoro Pishnu, Amaniya Mandani Kitanyas, by that process also, then this material identity will go, the attachment will cease.
In?
In the Apakrat Leela, he is there eternally. In the manifested pastimes, Bhishma. No. Bhim was there. Arjuna was there. No, I can't remember. Anybody knows? See, Arjuna is there. Arjuna also has a place in Radhakund. You know, the Pancha Pandavas, when they were excavating Radhakund, then Raghunath Das had the dream, and they said, don't cut down those trees, that's us, we're Pandavas. So they have different, take on different forms. But here it's, see, Radhakund, it's a conjugal relationship. But trees, they have Shantaras, so it's not Rasabhas there. The pastimes of Radha and Krishna going on. And there is trees. So it's not Rasabhas there. Just like Madhavendra Puri, he bought that relationship of Madhurya Rasa. He emphasized it. Madhavendra Puri, he said the Mahaprabhu's tree, desire tree, grew for him. So he bought that. Madhavendra Puri built this conjugal relationship, Radha Krishna, which wasn't commonly known. You see 500 years ago, you see these old deities, generally there's no Radharani there, they just have Krishna there. Radharani wasn't there. And so with Madhavendra Puri, then he introduced this conjugal relationship with Krishna. It's Krishna's greatest pleasure. And so he's understood, Madhavendra Puri, he knows all the intricacies of Radha and Krishna's pastimes. At Vamshivat, there's one Vamshivat banyan tree, which some people say could be Madhavendra Puri's. He has a form in the spiritual world, as a Kalpavriksha tree. So Radha and Krishna have different pastimes, especially Vamshivad. It's very intimate. And Radha and Krishna, even the Shakyas don't go there. It's very intimate. But the trees, they can see everything. They can see more than the Shakyas who are in conjugal love. They can witness the conjugal relationship of Radha and Krishna. But it's not the Rasavas because they're in a mood of Shantaras, neutrality. For those who are in conjugal relate, then it'd be a Rasavas we feel with Radha and Krishna. So this way Madhavendra Puri, he could know and present all of this information of the glories of the conjugal rasa, how it's Krishna's greatest pleasure. So he's there as the trees. So like that, satya-sankalpa, when you become spiritually perfect, all of your desires will become fulfilled. And whatever you desire will immediately become manifested. So there's no limit to what the different forms you can take. You can take so many. So to serve Krishna, they take different forms. I like to serve Krishna like this. You can. So it's said that those who were born in the Gopa and Gopi families in Vrindavan, they took their birth in Brahmana families in Navadvip. So Mayapur, Vrindavan, none different. You have choice. First deserve, then desire, of course, Prabhupada.
Sorry?
But you first deserve, then desire.
Although we're pretty fortunate in that we generally don't deserve, but Prabhupada gives us an opportunity to enter into these realms. But anger is considered a negative emotion, an enemy of the mind. And yet, we're observing in these pastimes the anger of Lord Shiva. And even in the picture above you, we've got
Lord Kalara.
He's sitting with angry, he's about to, it looks like he's about to smash a woman. So and you know, we've got that picture on the wall. We worshiping. And especially with, you know, these pastimes of Lord Balaram is becoming angry, and he's being glorified for that. In fact, you know, Arjuna is glorified for being angry at him. Or incited to, you know, to violence on a battle of Greeks, for the battle of Greeks. So, on the one hand, we see anger as being a negative corollary for lust. You know, it's anger comes from frustrated. Desire, frustrated material desires, and so it's easy for people to misconceive or misconstrue the anger in the spiritual context, and shy away from it. So, and yet we see in business pastimes, Krishna accepted Bhishma's offerings of anger, that everyone says, you know, his offering, his arrows that were piercing his body, as, you know, affectionately, he embraced that. So it's very hard to. Reconcile that somehow or other a devotee's offering him in anger is accepted by Krishna, or the devotee's anger is somehow part of bhakti when it's bought out of honorable. If a devotee is too angry, then people will stay away from it. I guess everybody wants to stay away from Bhagavan when he's angry too. Yet we worship them for that. So how do we develop and cultivate that ability to see the spiritual, you know, the even in the devotees that we worship them sometimes, we might get angry. Because we can think, oh, my anger is spiritual. You know, how do we see that the spiritual basis for these emotions, as opposed to material pushing, if you like? How do we differentiate between a material push and a spiritual push?
Well, I think it's something like here was expressed in the purport that it wasn't really anger, it was a display just to draw out different emotions and make some excitement. And see, in our society, we get angry sometimes. We're not supposed to. Angry in the negative point of view. But because we're dealing with devotees, we live with devotees, then that anger comes out with amongst devotees. The lust comes out with devotees. The greed, calm, crawl, law of mind. It's got to come out somewhere. We're still covered. So where's it going to come out to? We only associate with devotees practically. So it comes out amongst devotees. But Krishna doesn't see that so bad. Is keep at least we're keeping it in the family. It's being kept in the family. So Krishna doesn't consider that so. As people who become angry independently of Krishna, or not in relationship with Krishna or Krishna's service, oh, Krishna's very kind and forgiving. Their family, the children, are going to argue sometimes and quarrel and become angry. But we should see it as, you know, it came and it'll go away again. And to just learn some lesson. As you said, philosophically, we can put it, have a base of philosophy, then we can reconcile everything. You know? And as you said, I'm angry. Why am I angry? Because I had a lusty desire. It's a result of calm, crowed. That's why I'm angry. It's because I couldn't fulfill my lusty desire. So, what was that desire? That was just coming from previous desire. So that desire is just coming up and it's become manifested now and becoming a form of anger. So that's all it was. If we see it philosophically, it was just because I performed some activity previously which caused frustration, so I'm getting a reaction from that now. So then we have a philosophical basis, and then we see for what it is. It's just a reaction from my own sinful action in previous time, previous birth even, and it's just becoming fructified now. So at least that way we can handle it and live with it, and we hold it in our hearts forever that we don't get angry with this person. This shouldn't be a lifelong thing. Our process is chaito dharpana marjanam. It comes, it goes, okay. forgive and forget. But anger must be there. Prabhupada said, how you can fight? How Arjuna can fight if he's not angry? Anyway, he said, our philosophy is achinta veda veda tattva, it's inconceivable, one and different. So that's there. Prabhupada said, often these type of questions, you know, Prabhupada said, just wait till you go back and you'll see everything. When they're asking different questions, wait till you go back, you'll see how everything works, because sometimes you can't work out how spiritual things are happening with a material mind and body. You can't do it. See, Jiva Goswami, when he's in the beginning of his Satsandarbha, which is a very high philosophical treatise on Krishna, the nature of Krishna, so we're going to here's how to understand Krishna. So he begins. Now, first thing is that we accept that the Lord is inconceivable. That's the first thing. Now we'll start to try to conceive of Him. First you accept He's inconceivable. Now we're going to start the Sandarbhas to try to conceive of Krishna, who is inconceivable. So, anyway, that much which Krishna reveals, that much we can understand, and more than that we cannot. What Krishna reveals in Bhagavad Gita, I am this, I am like this. That we can, no much we can know. More we cannot know. Only what He's revealing. So some things will always remain unknown to us, as long as we're here. Okay. Say, Radha Palabju ki te, Jagannath Swami ki te, Gonitai ki te. There was a little boy in Mayapur, devotee, but naughty. He went to Jagannath Mandir, long time ago. No one was there, doors was open. And Subhadra had a very nice brooch. And he thought, I'd like to take that brooch. And no one is here. So he went into the deity room to take the brooch of Subhadra, and Balaram went. he pulled out the deity room, running to his mother, crying. She said, What's happening? Balaram slapped me. No, what's happening? No, don't be silly boy, what happened? Balaram slapped him. So even Balaram gets angry. The deity becomes angry. Baladeva ki. Thank you. Hare Krishna.